Yeah. Or like they say that everything that exists in the world was first a concept or an idea that somebody had. It has to start first in your imagination, and then it becomes reality, which is where we get the concept of vision boards or visualizing and believing what it is that you want and being grateful also for the chance and the opportunity for it to come to fruition and to come into reality. But you have to see it first.
Welcome to the 3 o'clock Coffee Podcast, a place where extraordinary people network together to share meaningful stories that inspire others. Do you have a great story you would like to share with the world? If so, go to 3oclockcoffee.com and sign up today to be on our show. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to click the subscribe button and tell a friend about the 3 o'clock Coffee Podcast.
Good morning or good afternoon, depending upon where you are in the world. And welcome to the 3 o'clock Coffee Podcast. Oh, gosh, can't wait to talk to Aaron, my friend, my virtual friend, actually, for many, many years, pre-COVID days. I was always intrigued with Aaron, how she was growing her photography company. So let's go inside the cafe and we're going to meet Aaron. So hang tight as we walk into the cafe. Hey, Aaron. Hey, thanks for meeting with me at the cafe. How are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Hey, for all the listeners out there, could you introduce yourself? I know you and I met virtually. We feel like fast friends. And, you know, it's really great that we get to meet for our coffee, our 3 o'clock coffee time. Cool. Actually, Aaron, I always forget everybody. Here I am sitting at the cafe, and I always forget people. I want to order a coffee for you. So the first thing I need to ask you is, what kind of coffee do you drink?
Free coffee is always my favorite coffee, Scott.
That's great.
But right now, I am enjoying some Starbucks K-Cup caramel flavored coffee with a little dollop of Miracle Whip on top.
Miracle Whip. Okay. And we got friends in the background at the cafe.
Yeah, working from the cafe today with little three-year-old princess here.
One of four kids, is that right?
The youngest of four.
Wow, that's amazing. So, oh my gosh, there's so much to say, so much to ask. First off, the coffee, vanilla latte is my go-to. But hey, another quick question. What kind of mug? You must have a favorite mug to have you.
Actually, I reward myself with mugs. Ooh. Yeah, so that's...
See, I knew there was going to be a story there. There's always a win.
This one is a Porsche mug. It's a 911 Carrera Porsche branded mug. I'm a big Porsche fan. But yeah, my hard work, that's what I'll do. I won't go buy jewelry or sometimes clothes, but forever it's been, I'll go get myself a fancy little mug that'll make me feel happy. Because yeah, I'm a huge coffee drinker.
And of course, that mug with the Porsche 911, that's part of your goal, that if you don't already have one, you're going to have one, correct?
I had a Porsche, actually. I had a beautiful black 2014 Porsche 911 Carrera S Cabriolet convertible. It was my heart and soul. I loved that car so much. But we sold it at the height of its value recently, how they just shot up. Mm-hmm. We actually sold it for only $2,000 less than what we bought it for about four years ago. So I kind of miss it a lot, but it was a good choice at the time.
We just started this interview, and I'm already like, all conversations revolve around coffee. I always say it. And so, you know, your mission statement, as far as your future vision about having that coffee bug, is like, I'm going to have a Porsche. I'm going to do that. And quick story, I did the exact same thing 25 years ago. I wanted a black sports car. I didn't know it didn't have the model or what it was, but I wanted a black sports car. And I took a photo of me in front of this beautiful black sports car. And I had it on my, I kept it for almost 10, 20 years. And when the business finally was going good and I could write the check, I went out and bought myself a brand new BMW 4 Series, blah, 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 blah. And it took me 20 years, almost 20 years to do it. But I wrote the check and it was the one goal that I wanted to do. But it was my future self. It was that vision, having that picture, photographer's mind, having a picture in my mind. So I like the way you think. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we talked about photography, but here's the really unique thing. You have a photography company taking pictures of pets, pet portraits, right?
Correct. Yes.
And you started in 2017, is that right? And as we record this, it's 2022?
Yeah, I kind of started in my living room in 2016, but officially January 2017 is the founding of Bonia Pet Studio. It's been a little over 6 years.
Four, 5 years? 5 years?
Well, 6 years. I've been working on
6 years.
Obsessed, nonstop. 6 years.
Started in your home, mm-hmm. And now you do over $2 million in sales.
That's the run rate. Yes.
Unbelievable. Like 5 years photographer. And people will always, I would tell in my former life when I was very active as a photographer, I would say I'm a photographer. People would say, well, what else do you do? And for 20 years, I was very successful full-time photographer. And nobody would be like, what do you mean? This is all I do. So it's awesome to talk to somebody that this is your mindset. This is all you think about.
Yeah. And I stopped being a photographer in the business in the end of 2018. Right. So that hasn't been my job title or major function of what I do in the company since then, because of this little princess that is making noise behind me. And she's home with a cold, but you know, she's 3 years old. So in April of 2019, she joined the family, and I had to figure out how to remove myself from being a photographer in the company because of that. So that was the cause of training somebody to create the photographs so that I could step away for a couple weeks.
I mean, that's brilliant. And it's been a couple of years now, right? I mean, when somebody starts a small business, having a small business, the most important part is what is your future plans and having a future vision of what that business would look like, but also creating self-management company, right? So you're home, your daughter's sick, you're home. We're on a home video virtual call, but really not in the cafe. If anybody's listening, we're really on a virtual call, but you've created a self-management company that can produce millions of dollars in sales in a pet studio. And that's exactly how you scale a business. You did it. It's proven to me that this is the way it works. And I'm speechless because I don't come across so many people that have done this so good as you have. What inspired you to have this vision to think the way you do? Obviously, you think 10 times bigger than anything you do. I could just tell by the car you drive.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. It is very much my personality. It's who I am as a person, I think, is a big part of it. My personality style, it lends itself to be an entrepreneur. I am a visionary creative entrepreneur to a T. So if you were to give me any kind of assessment that would gauge that sort of thing, then that is who I am. So I think that's naturally where my hand falls. You know, I have the tendency to have that, the vision, and to have the drive and the creativity and the problem solving. And I am very good at taking risk. I have a high tolerance for risk. I also thrive on change and I adapt really quickly. And I'm also a people person. So I'm good at working with my team and providing that vision for them that provides that leadership. So all of those factors go into making a good entrepreneur and a good business leader. I couldn't be somebody that didn't have a high tolerance for risk. You know, if I couldn't handle risk and I needed things to stay the same all the time, I wasn't good at constant change, then I wouldn't last 2 months trying to do what I've done at all. So it definitely has to go back to just who I am as a person and everything in my life that's led up to making me who I am today.
I couldn't agree with every word that you just said. And if anybody's listening to this podcast, I seem to say this on every episode, but when you have an extraordinary person on a conversation, and you may not see it that way, but the listeners will, I guarantee you, because you have what it takes to create a business. And there's always six, I always call it six critical principles of running a business. And you said all of them in our conversation. One, leadership, obviously marketing, sales, you've got down. You can create a unique product, especially with pets. And you know, you can understand overhead, and definitely you're doing a great job in cash flow. But you mentioned something really important in your conversation. You love change, right? You love change. And during the pandemic, I've always said the people that love change, that can adapt, they're going to do extremely well during this time. And they're not going to get stunned by, oh, change, I got to do something. And talk to me, did that make a difference in the way your ability to run this business the way you did? Change, did it grow? Yeah.
I think that it's the tolerance of change. And it's not only tolerance of it, it's actually a need for it. And I can't really have everything stay the same for very long at all. I need that constant change in order to stimulate my mind. I can't let it just be the same all the time. And I think it's because since a very young age, I haven't had a constant in my life in anything. I didn't have a constant family, a constant household. I mean, I moved out of my parents' house, my mom's house, when I was 17 years old, and she had left, you know, a couple of years before that, I think. I don't even really remember. So since, you know, she took me out of school when I was in the middle of fifth grade, I have had a tumultuous upbringing. And then I married a military man. So then it was even more just change all the time. So that's what I'm used to. And that's what I thrive in. But my business requires somebody with the opposite set of skills and the opposite mindset and characteristics, because, you know, when I'm part of the business and I'm there in person on a day-to-day basis, that sort of mentality and that sort of person creates and brings with them, I should own it, I create and bring with me a certain level of chaos. And, you know, people in general and employees are not that way. Most people don't thrive in that sort of environment. So it can create a lot of also just angst and anxiety and uncertainty. So I have to be mindful of the effect that that sort of mentality has on my team. And my business requires the opposite in order to manage the business. So I'm great at the long-term vision and driving it forward and coming up with creative solutions to big problems and just persisting and, you know, that sort of thing. But the day-to-day operations and management, I need somebody to fill that role for me.
Yeah, you're like myself. You're the arsonist of your own fire sometimes. You're the arsonist of your own fire, right?
Well, if we could, like, do this better. No, let's modify the script again. Or what if we had this role?
How can it be better? You know, like, how can it be different? Well, it works now. No, it doesn't work now. You have to.
Learning and figuring out that, you know, people are not like that in general. And I can't just totally change the price list and hand it to them and expect that they're going to be able to wing it and go with the flow and adapt quickly. I mean, you know, it was a learning curve for me to understand how other people function and how it is different from the way that I function. That's been a big learning opportunity for me.
I mean, it sounds like we have the same kind of thought process in the way of thinking. It's, you know, I call it my ADHD as my superpowers that gets me to think so creatively and so like 10 times bigger, because I visually can actually see it in my mind as it's already been completed. So it's, I don't have any stress over it when I'm actually in it because I've already lived it in my mind. It sounds like that's the way you operate.
Yeah, it sounds like a visionary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it has seem to me like there are two businesses. There's the current business, the way that it actually is in reality. And there's the second business, which is the vision that I have for the future. And it does feel real. It feels as if it already exists. And sometimes I've been writing on a whiteboard and creating systems or creating a new concept. And it feels like I am writing from something that is already existing, something that is inside me. And I guess if it doesn't sound too heady or up in the clouds, it's, you know, almost like inspired from something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody that's been in your spot and your level of your life, right? You're raising your floor, right? You're raising your floor of what you're going to accept. Am I going to accept that? No, I'm going to take care of my child. I'm going to do this. You're constantly raising your floor to make it better and better and better and better. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. And anybody that's been in your spot in business and exactly what you just said is almost the exact recipe that everybody has gone through. And I guarantee you the people that have been there will say, I understand the shaking their head, because that's exactly what has to happen. That's exactly what happens. And you don't realize it till you're actually in it and you can look back. Because once you're in it, you don't know it. It's when it's completed and you look back, you probably can understand what you actually did. I don't know if it works out for you, but
yeah, or like they say that everything that exists in the world was first a concept or an idea that somebody had. It has to start first in your imagination and then it becomes reality, which is where we get the concept of vision boards or visualizing and believing what it is that you want and being grateful also for the chance and the opportunity for it to come to fruition and to come into reality. But you have to see it first, right?
You'll never get there. You'll never get there, right?
Right.
One of my good friends, Dr. Benjamin Hardy, he has one of the top selling books out. He has a new one coming out. His last one recently is Be Your Future Self. Be Your Future Self. And I talk to Ben weekly. I'm grateful to have that opportunity for him. And he's changed my life in the way I think. And all of 2022 was all about being my future self, about taking myself 1 year from today and where do I want to be? And then going back and living it today, like right now. You are your future self right now. Be your future self. And so many people say, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. I'm going to open up a pet studio. It doesn't matter what it is. You want to open up a cupcake place, you can do it. It's been done. But having that vision of where exactly I'm going to go, how I'm going to do it, then work back is the recipe for extreme success.
And I think that the other ingredient that you have to add there is the action and the hard work. And I think it goes unsaid too often because, you know, my mom told me when I was a kid, you can do anything that you put your mind to. And she really drilled that into my head. I can do anything that I put my mind to until I tried to work full time and have my husband be in military flight training and go through the housing market crash of 2008. And I tried to do it all. And I quickly realized that I actually cannot do anything that I put my mind to, that there are limitations on what I'm able to do. And the other lesson was I can do anything I put my mind to, but putting my mind to it's not enough. I have to be willing to put the hard work in and have the discipline to show up. Like this last Sunday, I went to work and did 3 sales appointments on Sunday when I was missing my kids. And I very well could have just said, you know what, let's schedule some Zoom appointments for them later on and we'll photograph them. And Kelsey, you can do the sales next week. But I didn't. I have the dedication. And even after 6 years, and I didn't have to, but I also want to show a good example to the rest of my team that, you know, if I say I'm going to do something, then you better believe it. I'm going to show up and I'm going to do it. And so I think it's a lot more than just putting your mind to it, envisioning it and seeing where you want to go. You have to also add in commitment and discipline and hard work and sacrifice and all of those other ingredients as well. And that's not always fun at all.
No, you're right. I mean, that's number one of my 6 critical principles of owning a successful business or operating a small business. Number 1 is leadership. And you just said that you have to have leadership, and leadership is showing up exactly what you did physically and showing up as an example that you're in a part of the team. And I think that's the most important part of growing a company, because you can do whatever you want to do. It's not that you need to, it's because you want to do it. But also it's not how we do it, it's who does it. And who is your team? So whenever we do something, we want to grow to 10 locations. Like, how are we going to do that, Scott? No, it's not how, it's who. Who's going to do it? And let's find the who's and let's build that team around that. And that's exactly what you did. The other thing I'll point out to you is you don't mention the word employee. You mention team members.
Yes. I also like to refer to them as pet enthusiasts.
That's funny. I like that. I was never the boss at my company. I was always the coach. And everybody was always team members. And when we did Santa Claus photos at our pop-up stores, everybody else was the elves, but I was still always the coach. But we had elves, and then everybody was always a team member. And I wrote a book in 2019 about how to build a team and leadership. And it wasn't an accident how I did it. I've done it multiple times, and how to build a team. And it's a skill, but you said it earlier. I could already tell you're a people person. And you just got to be, you got to like people, right?
Of course, you have to like people. You have to.
Not all of them. Not everybody. But you got to like, at least you got to like some people.
It's just very much like children. And the only reason I say that is because they will copy the way that I act. The way that I treat them is the way they treat each other. The way that I respond to clients is the way they respond. So I set the culture with everything that I do, everything that I say, and that is the tone. I set the tone for everything, and people also need to just be appreciated, of course, and to be treated like human beings. In the very beginning of one of the first 5 employees that I ever hired, I tended to be a little bit more of the analytical, the driven by numbers, and, you know, what's wrong with you? What do you mean you need a mental health day? Knock that off, you know, show up, get to work. And it was also another hard lesson that I learned. And she actually left a review for me that said that I treated people more like robots and not like humans. And that hurt. It really stung, you know, because of course I really care about people. And I tend to also be a highly driven person. And I don't always want to hear about personal lives. It actually takes a lot of effort on my part to care about that and to let them know that I care because I am focused on business. But I know that that's important. So I do make an effort to get to know them personally. But it was a hard lesson. So, you know, and I took that to heart. But I really do care. I really do care, even if I don't necessarily want to hear about the birthday party on Saturday, I really do care about them as people. And so I have given people, you know, paid vacation, paid parental leave, bereavement leave. I've had employees who have gotten arrested for horrible situations that were just actually very unfortunate, and they found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they ended up missing work. And in a lot of other businesses, they would have been fired. But, you know, I understand that people make mistakes and people have hard times, and I'm not going to make their life that's already a difficult situation. I'm not going to make it even worse by also making them lose their job and give them a second chance. And now, you know, that person happens to be one of our most dedicated and committed team members. So, you know, really allowing them to have lives and understanding that they are just, I think that really what it is I don't see myself as more important than them. I really see myself as an equal with all of my team members. If not, they are more important than I am, because it's my job to provide them with what they need in order to make their jobs easier. But I in no way see myself as anything other than an equal with the people on my team, at least on a human level.
I mean, again, the perfect recipe. If anybody's listened to this, this is why people miss this exact point. And it's probably, I lived it myself, so I can really understand it. And I'm almost like speechless, because if you don't know how to create that culture, that vibe, I call it a vibe, and create everybody on this equal playing field per se, and also manage that time, because your time's important. And, you know, like, I get it. All the side conversations are really difficult to maintain when you have 30, 40, 50 team members and so forth and so on. I totally get it. But it's maintaining that level. And you just said it perfectly. And again, that's why people say, why are you successful? Oh, man, you're lucky. Wow, you're lucky, right? Wow, isn't that interesting? Because the harder you work, the luckier you get.
It is right? A very, very difficult balance, though. It's probably one of the hardest things that I've done is to strike that balance between providing a work-life balance for people while also looking out for the best interests of the business. And that is extremely hard. I just had another team member who wants to take 4 days off this month. And it's, you know, we already are missing 3 days in this 6-week period of time. We had Thanksgiving that we were closed. Christmas Day, we'd usually be shooting. New Year's Day, we'd usually be shooting. So that's 3 business days that, you know, we will not be shooting. And that's how I think of it now, right? I'm like, oh, well, we got to close for Thanksgiving. This is very inconvenient. Get the portraits done. But I know that not everybody is like that. People want to spend time with their families. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so in having to say either no or yes to that. So do I allow this person who, if she's not there, we're not photographing at that studio because we're in the process of hiring for the position that she is currently filling. And without her, we're not selling anything. So do I close down and take the appointments off the calendar for those 4 days? Or, you know, do I say no to this person who is a very committed and loyal and hardworking, very important member of the team? And it's a hard choice. It's one of the hardest choices that we've had to make.
Do you notice that we've talked for a few minutes here and we haven't talked one thing about a camera, anything photo related? Do you need to notice that?
No, and I'm actually going to be speaking at the AIM. It's the Animal Image Makers Conference in April. I'm very excited. I'm going to be speaking about automation and follow-up and how people can increase their business by just adding automation to it. And they want me to send example images. And I'm like of my office? or mm-hmm. I'm going to send them photos of the studio. It's not about my work that I'm creating.
It's not about the gear.
It is my team. Yeah. That is my work that I create, the photographs. Of course, the photographs are the final product that we're actually offering to our clients, but it's actually even just it's a part of it because it's actually the experience that we're offering.
Yeah, it's great. I call it the Santa experience. We don't take Santa photos, right? We have the Santa experience.
Yeah.
We had it. I wrote a book in 2019 and in 2021. My first book was called Camera Focus. And the first thing that people asked me was, oh, I can't wait to get it. Is it a coffee table book? What kind of photographs did you put in it? I'm like, there's not one pen, there's not one photograph in it. It's about photography, but it wasn't about taking the photo.
I think that is a huge, huge barrier. You know, they talk about the gap. PPA refers to the gap. And that is what it is.
The gap in the game.
That is the gap in our industry, is that photographers do not realize that it's not about them and it's not about the pictures. It's not about your style. It's not about dark and moody or light and airy. It's about the customers. I wish that message was what we were putting out there to the industry, and stop putting so much emphasis on this new camera or this new lens. I understand that if you are a wildlife photographer, then yes, the gear matters. But when I'm creating a studio and I'm buying a new camera, I'm not spending $2,000 to get a 70 to 200 because that is an amazing portrait lens. So yes, it's an amazing portrait lens if you're photographing outside, but I'm not. I'm photographing in the studio. So I spend $700 and I get a 24, what is it? I don't even know what the lens is that we're using.
24 million. Yeah, 24 to 50. Or
it's
called the Nummel Kit lens.
24 to 200. And the fastest that it goes at the
F4, F5.
Yes, exactly. That's all I need.
Yeah,
because
that's all you need.
What I provide is a service to a customer, and the customer is looking for a certain outcome. And whether my camera can go to 2.8 or it goes to 4.5 has absolutely nothing to do with how important that portrait is to that client. That's the gap that exists in our industry right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's one of my drives right now. Why I kind of searched you out is my goal is to help photographers build a business. Photography built simple. It's my program. And you're right. It's, you see a photographer, oh, look at the camera I bought. It's all about me. Because I get it. I've been there, right? I'm the creative style in my earlier days. But that's not going to create a business. That's not going to become successful. What we just talked about, we could have been talking about open up a muffin place and selling muffins, blueberry muffins, for all it matters, because that was the end product. Because we had a fancy stove, whatever the stove is, it doesn't matter. The end results were we produce great muffins that people want to eat. It doesn't matter what kind of stove we have, right?
Yeah, or we created an ambiance where they can go with their friends and sit down and make a connection that adds value to their life and gives them an experience. And it fulfills that human need of connection and a social experience. And yes, it's a good tasting muffin. So, I mean, understanding what it is that you are actually selling is everything. And so many times people put their name and the photography at the end, and they don't understand how anybody could ever hire other photographers to create the product, because, you know, it's so important to the clients that they are the artist and that they're the ones who are actually taking the photographs. And that is, it couldn't be further from the truth. None of the 100,
they don't care.
They do not care. They are going after a certain outcome. And the outcome is recording their beautiful families and having memories to look back on. And for, you know, do you think that in 20 years when they're looking at wall portraits of their beautiful family, that they're like, oh my gosh, that was a Scott Poprosky photo. I'm so glad I chose him to be our photographer. No, they're saying, look at little Johnny when he was only 5 years old and how important my family is to me. So that's the story brand. Building a story brand talks a lot about.
Hold on. What, you know, Donald Miller?
Of course. Building a story brand.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good friend of mine.
That book, I think, really drives it home. It's
absolutely. I read the book 6 or 7 years ago. I had a conversation with them just the other day. Donald Miller, he's on the story brand. It's everything. I think he created the whole, if you follow the story brand, if you really deep dive Donald Miller and his program and being a friend of mine, and he's got to figure it out. It's amazing. It's amazing. That's awesome. It's exactly what I did 7 years ago. Maybe we read the same book. Alan, put us where we are.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite that long ago that I listened to that book multiple times, but yes, that's the concept. Yes. You know, it's not about us. Yes. It's about our customers. And if photographers...
Who's going to be the hero? Who's the hero?
Yes. Right? It took me a long time to understand what that meant, to make mm-hmm. the client the hero of the story. Mm-hmm. And the opposite is saying how beautiful my work is, the amazing product that I offer to people, and how it's so incredible that I can work with difficult animals. That's me being the hero of the story. But mm-hmm. if the client is the hero, then it's, you know, you treasure your pets so much. You love them. You want to celebrate that love that you have for them. You can feel that love, but with a beautiful portrait, you'll be able to see that connection and that relationship that you have, and the experience will provide for you so you can get the outcome that's important to you.
Right. Being having a purpose that you actually did a great product and you got somebody actually loving something that you created. That's all. That's all that matters. At least it does in my mind. I completely agree with you. The industry as photographers changing the mold of if they want to run a business, they have to look at people that have already done it and learn from them and figure out how they're going to do it. Because if they just continue to think about the gear and have that solo mindset, there, you know, you're gonna have a family, you're not gonna be able to do things. And you wrote the story of how to build a, you know, multi-million dollar photography company. And, you know, if you want to go into the muffin business and open up muffins, I'll go in with you because I know you could do the same thing with a muffin company. It's really the same recipe, right? Would you agree?
I think that people need to look outside of the photography industry. When I started mm-hmm. studying raising capital, I learned all about what goes into a good business plan. I learned how to make a pitch deck. Go and make a pitch deck for mm-hmm. your photography company as if you were going to go and pitch in front of angel investors. And if you do that, you're going to have to take a hard look at your financial plan. You're going to have to make projections. You're going to have to say, what are the strengths and weaknesses of your management team? You're going to have to talk about your competitive analysis and mm-hmm. the market and who's your ideal client and how are you going to go to market? All of these things that go into the principles of a scalable, sustainable business. So mm-hmm. I think that going through that process as if you were going to pitch to angel investors, because it will force you to take a hard look and to do the work that goes into developing all of those pillars of a sustainable business. And that's what a lot of people don't do ever. And they don't understand why, right? They don't know why they would ever write a business plan or a pitch deck, because they're never going to do that. They're never going to pitch to investors. So why would they do it? But all of the work that you would need to do in order to prepare to do that is what will make your business stronger. Because if your business is attractive to investors, then that's because it's a strong business with a good future that can scale up and has all of the things that an investor would look for, is all the things that you would want to look for in your business as well.
It goes back to having that future vision of where you actually want to go. To create that, if you want to create that business. I never did I ever imagine that I would be in the boardroom pitching my business to investors. And I was there. I did it. I lived it. And it was about 10 years ago, I did my pitch to the investors and I was halfway through my presentation and one of the gentlemen standing up looked over my shoulder and said, "Are you almost done?"
Oh, no.
And I said, "What a slight pause." I said, "Yes." And took the laptop and just closed it very slowly. Oh, God. And said, "Yes. Matter of fact, I am done."
Oh, no.
Well, little to say, I jumped in that BMW that I did have at the time and took my tie off. It was the last time I ever wore a tie, by the way. And I threw in the back seat of my BMW and I drove back home to Boston. It was an 8-hour drive. I didn't even stop. And I learned so much in that 8-hour drive home nonstop. About pitch, it was my life lesson about if I'm going to do this again, like I would have done a million things over again. And I actually had the opportunity to go to the boardroom and pitch to even get that far many, many years ago was the turning point in my company of why I needed a coach, I need to find people that have already been there before. And I knew it didn't have to be photography. It could have been anybody doing any business. And that's exactly what I did, which actually led to, you know, what I've accomplished. So great. I that's just a great example that I'm going to bring out to pitch it like you are going to pitch it to a venture capitalist. And that's the vision. If you can create that vision for that person, and we could do that for 1,000 photographers out there that say, hey, have a future vision, build your business like you're going to go to the boardroom. You go into the Shark Tank, right? Build it like you're going to go to the Shark
Tank. Know your numbers.
That's awesome.
That's maybe one of the
best. Yeah, right?
Know your numbers.
Yeah. I know you're a Donald Miller fan of the story branding. He has something called, he has a metaphor around the airplane to run a business. And not only I wrote a book about a metaphor, how to run a business around a camera. And that's how I kind of got to know Don Miller about this whole metaphor piece that I actually love. And one of them, I'll just point out because you mentioned cash flow. Cash flow is number six of the top six things you need to run a business. And if you run out of fuel, you're going to crash. And if you run out of cash, you're going to crash. And I love a lot of his metaphors to keep things going. And I'm a big metaphor kind of guy. So it's great.
Yeah.
Hey, Aaron, this has been a great conversation. I didn't know where this was going to go when we jumped on a call, but gosh, we like covered a lot. And this will last, you know what, let's make an appointment 1 year from today to listen to this podcast and see what maybe change we did. And if we could just change one life that actually somebody listened to this podcast. And that was my purpose, my book, just to change one life. And I accomplished that within minutes of writing that book. So, you know, and I know you have high goals to help others. And I think it's just amazing. And I'm just very grateful that you took my message and you were able to jump on this call. And I seem like I've known you for 20 years.
Thanks for inviting me anytime. Love to come back in 1 year.
Excellent. Excellent.
Or whenever.
Bring it back to the cafe. Aaron, I just want to say thank you very much again. Thanks for taking time away from your family and your kids and having a cup of coffee with me and all the other listeners that are listening to this, because I know it'll be well worth it to somebody someday. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.